Jeff Flake yesterday announced he'd had enough and will not seek re-election next year. The news caught many people off guard, but it wasn't a complete shock to some, including Nathan Gonzalez. He's the editor and publisher of Inside Elections, and a few weeks ago, he told us he'd been hearing rumbling that Flake may not run for a second term. He's back with me now, and Nathan, you kind of predicted this a little while back. What do you make of Flake's announcement?
Well, I'm definitely not surprised based on what we've been saying for the past few weeks, but and I don't know if I would go as far to say it was a prediction. I mean, I think that there were a variety of party strategists who were looking at the senators' polling numbers and just not seeing a path to victory, particularly in both the primary and general elections. So I don't think it's a surprise, and now it's kind of a reset on at least half the race.
So if you are Kyrsten Sinema right now, what are you thinking?
Well, on one hand, it changes things because you don't know who your opponent's going to be, and it's going to take some time for Republicans to sort out who's running and who's the front runner for this nomination. Now, but at the same time, it's even though Jeff Flake had his vulnerabilities, it is tough to defeat an incumbent, and so now it's an open seat. She's just going to have to recalibrate probably some of the messaging, but it doesn't change the fact that she's a strong candidate. I think this remains a top Democratic takeover opportunity, and if Democrats have any chance of winning the majority or limiting their losses, then winning this seat would help them in that cause.
All right, so if you're Kelly Ward now, what are you thinking?
Well, I think Kelly Ward's chances just got a lot more difficult. I think she still is a credible contender for the nomination, in part based on running before and having people who have voted for her for the Senate, but now I think she's going to get at least one or more challengers in the primary who don't have the specific baggage that the senator had. Many of the Republicans who are being mentioned aren't perfect, but they haven't specifically attacked or gone after the president and drawn the same fire that the senator was taking on.
Do you expect to see a large number of people making a bid here? Do you think that there's going to be an effort to try to consolidate maybe behind one or maybe even two candidates in addition to Kelly Ward?
I think whenever an incumbent retires, then you have a large number of aspiring politicians take a look at what their future plans might look like. And I think there are some Republicans who would be interested in as least of a messy primary as possible. But if the field is large, that actually could encourage people because that means you don't have to get a majority of voters to back you. You can win the nomination with a plurality and actually a smaller number of voters. So I think that this news is still fresh. A lot of people are going to take a look, and we'll see who ends up on top. And there could be multiple stages of this race where there's a bunch of people who jump in, and someone could figure out that it's tough to raise the money necessary or their path to victory is more difficult than they thought, and there could be a winnowing out before we get to next year. And as you and your listeners know, this is a late primary. There's a lot of game to be played in this race.
Are you hearing any particular names that seem like strong contenders to at least jump into the race, if not, maybe actually win it?
Yeah, I think most of the delegation will probably take a look. Arizona has a number of statewide elected officials that will take a look. In this environment where there isn't a deep love for politicians, there are probably some outsiders who will take a look now that they don't have to challenge a sitting senator. But I think campaigns have a way of deciding who is strong and who is not, because sometimes a candidate might look good on paper, but they're just not able to put together the campaign necessary to win.
Does the timing, do you think, affect the race in any way? As you said, Arizona has a fairly late primary, so still, a little less than a year before next year's primary. But do you think that that influences things as opposed to if he had made this announcement months ago or if he were to make it, two or three months from now?
I think that the timing allows a number of people to have time to evaluate their options. It probably helps down the ballot. I mean, there's a cascade or a domino effect where if you have members from the delegation who decide to run, then that will allow candidates who want to run for their seats time to ramp up their campaigns. So this is still fairly early, and that might increase the number of people who want to run because they have more time.
All right. Nathan Gonzalez is editor and publisher of Inside Elections. Nathan, good to talk to you. Thanks as always.
No problem.
Closer to home, Republicans who've known Flake for years were also taken aback by the senator's decision. Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting challenged Flake for a U.S. House seat in 2004 and is with me to talk about his reaction. So, Stan, how surprised were you by Flake's announcement?
I am as surprised by this as I would be a hurricane in Arizona. And conveniently enough, this feels like a political hurricane in Arizona. It just doesn't happen that a otherwise successful incumbent center-right Republican U.S. senator from Arizona would feel like he cannot win his own reelection. And I take it as the most, not only the latest, but the surest sign that something has gripped the voter in Arizona nationally, and it's bigger than Donald Trump. It's bigger than Bernie Sanders. It is a political phenomenon that is hard to see, but is very real. And when sophisticated, smart guys like Jeff Flake calculate that it's a losing proposition to run for reelection, you know that the phenomenon is here, has announced itself, and is semi-permanent, at least as permanent as you get in modern politics.
I've had people say to me, well, you know, the party is now in the hands of those who are Donald Trump supporters. And when Jeff Flake decides not to run, you mentioned the hurricane before. Does this indicate to you that the party is leaning more toward more the extreme right, let's say?
The short answer is no. I don't think this is an ideological thing. I think this is an us versus them thing. I think this is voters deciding that if you are a traditional candidate, even a traditional conservative guy like Jeff Flake, you may be a part of the governing elite. And that means you have contempt for your own constituencies. And I think that's where the root of this is. I don't believe you can point to it and say it's free trade or not, or it's tax cuts or not, or it's social liberalism or not. I think it is voters feeling like the governing class holds them in contempt. And if you comport yourself as a traditional political figure and you are held up against someone who is not a traditional political figure and is willing to punch you in the nose over your civic nature and your diplomacy, then you're in trouble.
So based on what you said about Flake, does this mean we shouldn't expect the usual names to pop up? Martha McSally, David Schweikert, maybe even Matt Salmon to jump in here.
Yeah, that's my theory. I think two things. One, it's a bad day for Kelly Ward because she had a clear and easy message to understand. She's not Jeff Flake. And now that message is no longer useful for her, and she's going to be in a real primary with serious-minded people that can raise money and perhaps have more name ID than she. Second thought is that given the times we are in and the political wave, the phenomenon, the dynamic, however you want to label it, that any political animal can see, we might not get traditional names come forward. Martha McSally is a great example of that. She is a fighter pilot, female, elected member of the United States Congress, but she just doesn't fit into this particular narrative, and so she might not step into what would be a normal exercise for her. We're betwixt and between. I mean, the revolution is slow and soft and a bit abstract. I actually had a person tell me, a successful attorney in town. He said, you know, I never thought I could ever run for office because I rub people the wrong way with my belligerent personality. But now that Trump's in the White House, it feels like people are looking for that kind of person. He might be right.
Does that include you, Stan?
No. I've made my bed, and I'm afraid I'm in it.
Former state lawmaker Stan Barnes, he's also the man behind Copper State Consulting. Mr. Barnes, thank you as always.
Thanks, Steve.
And nobody wants me to talk about your other senator, who's weak on borders, weak on crime. So I won't talk about him.
That's President Trump when he was here in Phoenix for a rally back in August. While here, the president wasn't shy about bashing both Arizona senators, though never by name, which became part of the inside joke for the crowd. Now, just 2 months later, Jeff Flake used the same technique in his surprise announcement yesterday to not run for re-election.
Reckless, outrageous, and undignified behavior has become excused and countenanced as telling it like it is, when it is actually just reckless, outrageous, and undignified. And when such behavior emanates from the top of our government, it is something else. It is dangerous to a democracy.
Senator Jeff Flake hasn't been shy about criticizing President Trump. He started long before last November's election and has continued since Inauguration Day. His more subtle battle against the president, Flake hasn't exchanged insults over Twitter, for example, took the form of his book, which took its name from another Arizona senator, Barry Goldwater, Conscience of a Conservative. In it, Flake took aim at Trump's style and his often abusive language, as well as his substance, including his anti-free trade stance and attacks on immigrants and refugees. Here he is in August talking with us on the show.
And a 24-hour media cycle that we're on, and social media kind of rewards those who yell the loudest. And sometimes, it's tough to have a reasoned debate. I'm a conservative. That's why I wrote the book, because I'm concerned that on policy issues that we're straying from traditional conservatism, limited government, economic freedom, free trade, and kind of going with an unfamiliar banner, and this populism, protectionism, anti-immigration, and I'm concerned about where that takes us in the long term. And I can tell you, I don't know how in the world we're going to sit down with our colleagues across the aisle and hammer out some of these big issues that we need to deal with in a conservative way, our debt and our deficit, on tax policy, on health care, if we're ascribing the worst motives to our opponents, or if we're calling them clowns or losers. It just it doesn't forward our conservative goals.
Arizona Republic columnist Bob Robb helped hire Senator Flake at the Goldwater Institute and told us just last week he never pegged Flake as a man with the desire to be in public life to begin with. Flake's trajectory surprised him.
I did not see in him political ambition or political skills. So it was actually a surprise to me, not only that he ran for Congress in 2000, but that he won fairly handily against a pretty strong field. Initially, he seemed to be on a quixotic mission to get rid of earmarks, where congressmen in appropriation bills specify funds for projects that are of limited local importance. And ultimately made it Republican orthodoxy and got both the House and the Senate to pass bans on earmarks as part of the appropriation bills. So that sort of philosophy is very much what he's about. It alienated a lot of Republican office holders in the local government area, but he's not been afraid to embark on relatively lonely political quests.
Author John Meacham wrote a recent biography on President George H.W. Bush, and in it called him the last gentleman, saying the president felt, quote, the test of a political life is what one does with power more than what one does to win power. But that doesn't seem to be the way today's election cycle is. As Terry Ann Jones, director of international studies and associate professor of sociology at Fairfield University, told us back in February.
I have to say, I do appreciate when legislators are able to go beyond what they think the public's expectations are and to really give their own expressions. So, for example, the Gang of Eight. This was a bipartisan group. There were conservatives there, people who were expected to present themselves in a more conservative manner on immigration. And I think in terms of Flake as well, I think this backlash against him isn't necessarily based on his perspectives on the wall, but they're rooted in his participation in developing the 2013 Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill. That was seen by those who support a more restrictive approach to immigration as simply amnesty rather than a means to integrating the existing undocumented population. And the Trump administration's perspectives and the inciting of fear is influencing the public and is making them believe that, you know, there's something to fear from immigrants.
And when Steve Bannon stumped for Kelly Ward this month, ASU political scientist Richard Herrera saw it as a sign that the new political play would be about whipping up anger rather than raising record amounts of money.
The same voters who turned out for President Trump are being called upon again to take another step in taking over the party, in directing it towards the sort of things that they said they have done, but actually doing them, and holding the establishment Republican elected officials accountable for their failure to act. So I think, yes, you're right, money can overwhelm, but money can only go so far if the message is not a powerful one and doesn't generate the sort of emotion that's required to motivate people to turn out in a primary election.
And Senator Flake's term ends in January of 2019. Joining us now to talk about Senator Flake's pending retirement is Chad Willems. He's with Summit Consulting Group in Phoenix. He's also managed the campaigns of former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Chad, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
So what do you make of Senator Flake's announcement?
Well, you know, the senator is a friend. He was also a client. And so we were pretty bummed out to, find out the news yesterday morning that this is what he was going to do. The senator is, for a long time, has really been a lone wolf on a lot of issues like fighting earmarks and rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse, getting the House or the Senate's business in order and really looking out for taxpayers. And, we were just disappointed. I have the utmost admiration and respect for the man because he is so principled. And as he said in his floor speech yesterday, he wasn't willing to play this game where he had to, sacrifice principles or abandon some of those things he truly believes in just in order to win a political contest. The volume in our politics is so high right now. It's been high for quite a while, even before Trump. But I think for Senator Flake, I think he just got to the point where he just had to ask himself, what is the point here? I think it's a real drag. I think that Arizona's losing a really good senator. I think the country's losing a great senator who is often alone in fighting for issues to protect the taxpayers, and agree with him or disagree with him on some other issues. He's always stood firm and he's always been consistent.
But Chad, let me jump in for a sec, though. Is Senator Flake right, though, that he would have had a hard time winning re-election, maybe even winning a primary? And what does that say about his countenance, his class, versus what voters seem to want right now?
Well, I think he addressed that. When he said yesterday that he just doesn't believe anymore that there's room in the Republican Party for someone like him anymore. I mean, he is a true blue. I'm sorry, maybe a bad choice of words. He's a true. Goldwater conservative in the classic sense. And, Jeff has never been the kind of guy who's going to jump in front of the spotlight and be really flashy on things. He was more of the type of person who gets into politics to do something rather than to be something. And I think it just turned out that the base of the Republican Party didn't like what he was doing. I think a lot of the attacks on him were unfair, but, we don't live in a system where, we can just ram things through. There's a process, and sometimes you have to reach across the aisle and get a deal and get the best thing you can get in a process. And it seems like that's just no longer enough anymore.
Chad, do you think that this retirement signals something larger in the Republican Party? I mean, is this an example, as we've been reading about, of sort of the GOP internal struggles just further coming to light? Or is this just a guy who decided that he's had enough?
Well, I guess I can answer that two ways. First, we've seen other people, recently, bow out of running for reelection. I look at former Congressman Matt Salmon, who, was in the House. He kept his term limit pledge, went into the private sector, ran again in 2012. And after a couple terms, you know, it's like he couldn't get anything done. It was just such gridlock and such chaos back there that, and I'm, these are my words, I think it just wasn't fun anymore for Matt, if you will.
Sure.
And I think the same applies to Jeff in the sense that, you know, trying to do your best and doing the right thing just became not enough for certain elements of the party. I don't think the struggles are limited to the Republican Party. I think the Democratic Party too is having some internal struggles. They tend to fight more behind closed doors, whereas Republicans we really, you know, excel at having very public fights. But the Democratic Party's in trouble too. I mean, they are nominating some really far left people. If you look at the list of people who are gearing up to run against Trump in the next presidential election, these people are from the far, far left. And look how many of them have embraced, you know, truly socialized medicine that has been a disaster in places like, you know, Great Britain and elsewhere. And so there's just this very high volume and it's very polarized. And, you know, for guys who just want to go there and get something done and make progress on a conservative platform, it doesn't seem to be happening quick enough in today's day and age.
All right. That's Chad Willems with Summit Consulting Group here in Phoenix. Chad, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.